Welcome, welcome,
welcome
to Inspo, a podcast dedicated to telling the warts and all story of one Australian startup that is on a mission to bring personalized inspiration to 1 billion people. We will also be interviewing the celebrities, influencers, and experts who will be honest, revealing, and brutal to ensure that you live the most amazing life. My name is Mark Burness, and this is the Inspo Story. Welcome to episode 3 of the Inspo podcast, aptly entitled Not for the Faint-Hearted, which is a title that came about as a result of the conversation with today's guest that we'll get to very shortly. But first, an Inspo update. What's been going on in the world of building this app? Well, celebrations are in order because we've now built the prototype. So the prototype isn't a fully functioning app. It's a series of screens and sequences that enable people to understand what the app will look like and feel like, and to go through part of the process to kind of get that indication of kind of the growth of the app and what it will do, and just to make it more realistic so that we can get feedback. So there's two levels of feedback that we're seeking to get. One is with, from talent managers, agencies, and PR companies, as it is their celebrities, influencers, and experts that will be using the app. And the other is feedback from members of the public to really dive deep and dig deep into what could work, what doesn't work, what they like about it, what they don't like about it. So we're looking for validation to make sure that we are on the right track, and obviously get feedback so that we can make sure that we're on the right track if we're not. So if you'd like to be part of the prototype testing, please do email hello@getinspo.com with the subject prototype tester. So hello@getinspo.com. I would love for you to experience the app and let us know what you think. Now, we've got a bit of a dilemma. I've got a bit of a dilemma that's been facing me right now, and that is what I'm calling the charity dilemma. So my goal was to ensure that some of the proceeds of the profit of the business goes to charities. Now, there's two sides to this. One is I really want to support charities, but the other is obviously the opportunity to partner with charities and reach their audiences, which helps gain traction, which helps gain downloads, which is obviously the traction that we need to kick off with. I had a great meeting with a guy from Save the Children, and he mentioned that it's very difficult to get partnerships with leading charities, because many people are reaching out to them, many organizations, many businesses wanting to help them to raise money. And of course, they have to go through their own process. This really didn't kind of come to my mind, but they have to go through their own process to make sure that whoever they partner with and promote to their audiences is a bona fide, valid business, but also aligns with the needs. Now, of course, we don't have a concern that we wouldn't be a bona fide valid business, but he basically explained that it's hard. It's very hard to get such big charities on board. And I wanted to go for big charities. So I've been really pondering that. And I still want the proceeds to go to places, people, individuals, organizations that require money or support in some way. So there's two options that I have. One is to go to smaller charities that maybe don't have the strict process that larger charities do. Or the other option is to give money back to those using the app. So hear me out. I believe that we all have a purpose and potential to fulfill, that we all want to improve areas of our lives, whether it's career, relationships, finances, etc. And so I'm really kind of passionate about the idea of percentage of the profits going to individuals. So imagine on the app that you could upload a quick video about for you or your friend, somebody that you know, love, care about. And for example, we call it fuel. So it's fueling inspirational ideas. So maybe somebody has an idea to start their own charity, or somebody is raising money for a specific cause, or somebody wants to become a tennis player and they need sponsorship because they don't have much money and they need tennis rackets and sports gear. Or maybe, you know, it's somebody who wants to start their own business. So the idea that we're not going down the strict charity route, but we're giving money back to those who are using the app by fueling the inspirational ideas and goals and dreams that they have for their lives, for their community, and for people around them. So I'd love your feedback. Again, please head to the email hello@getinspo.com. I really want your feedback. Should we go for the smaller charity route, or should we go for giving back to those using the app by fueling their inspirational dreams? So I'd love your feedback on that. So let's head to today's guest, Darren Moffat, who is an award-winning business person, public speaker, and podcast host who is passionate about entrepreneurialism. Darren is a recognized leader in both the financial services and digital marketing industries, and over a period of 20 years has helped hundreds of businesses grow. Since 2014, Darren has been director of digital strategy and content at five-star digital marketing agency WebBuzz, the growth marketing agency. Darren and his partner Ben Caro and the team have generated 150,000 online leads for small enterprise businesses across diverse ranges of industries. In 2012, Darren co-founded a tech startup, Facebook for Neighbors, called HouseNet. The social networking site was later awarded as one of the top 100 innovations in Australia in the Smart 100 Index. And in 2020, Darren launched the Nerds of Business podcast. I love his podcast. This podcast has already attracted international industry media attention, and he has interviewed guests worth a combined $2.5 billion. Most recently, Nerds of Business was featured by Apple Podcasts and reached number 3 in the business podcast charts and a high of 57 of all Australian podcasts. Darren is somebody that I admire, that I'm inspired by, and has a deep level of experience in the entrepreneurial world, not just through building his own startups, but also speaking to and learning from business owners all over the world, and also helping business owners to grow through his agency. So he has this three-pronged approach, this 360 view on businesses and startups, which is why I wanted a conversation with Darren. And as you can see, the content, the conversation really helped me to build a vision of what I need to be and what the business needs to be in order to succeed. So let's get straight into the conversation. Darren, welcome to the Inspo podcast. Good to have you with us.
Well, thanks, Mark. No, it's great to be here. I'm excited to chat with you.
I mentioned to you just before we recorded that during the summer here in Australia, I would have what I call pool and podcast sessions in my pool. And yours was the podcast that I was listening to every single session. So I'm extremely inspired by what you've done, and also feel quite overwhelmed by interviewing such a great podcaster. So hopefully I'll be awesome and we'll be good and we'll get on track. So thank you so much. I'm really looking forward to it.
No, thanks, Mark. You're very gracious. And I'm really looking forward to the chat.
Beautiful. All right, so let's kick straight into it. So what is your experience in the startup business world? I know you've got lots. So if you could just give us an overview.
I'll try and keep it really condensed. So basically, I've been through the startup cycle several times myself. So I've got a finance business, which has been, it's quite a mature business now. It's been going for about 15, 16 years. But of course, that was a startup. That was my first business and my first startup. Prior to that, I worked in another business that was a startup. So I saw the startup cycle, you know, as an employee. And then I learned from that, went out, started my own. And then, about 5-6 years after the finance business, which is called Seniors First, I then launched a tech startup, which was a massive learning curve and ultimately failed, but was a very rewarding experience and led to another business. So from the ashes of that, we spun off into a digital agency. And then in addition to all of that, I've through the agency, I've worked with a lot of startups. I've had a lot of clients in the startup world. So, I've experienced it from all different, different angles and sides, and I love it, but, you know, it's certainly not for everyone. It's not for the faint of heart.
Awesome. It's great to hear your experience, and that's exactly why I wanted you on the show. So a cheeky question to start with. So we've got listeners who are in the corporate world thinking about starting their own business, So corporate world or launching a startup, which do you think is better and why?
Well, you know, to use the phrase, I have a horse in this race. I'm a bit conflicted. I'm a fan of startups. Look, you know, I think if I can maybe approach the answer from a slightly different angle, I think the key here is to know thyself, you know, to have self-knowledge and understand what your strengths are, what your weaknesses are. And, you know, startups aren't for everyone. You know, you've got to – corporates are great for learning and development and a linear career path, stability, you know, all of those kind of things. But I've seen and known plenty of people in the past who've tried to make the jump from corporates into startups, and it just hasn't worked, because in startup world, you need to really be able to look after yourself, and you've got to be very, very agile, and you've also got to be able to really have a high appetite for risk and pain. And if you don't have that, and a lot of people in the corporate world aren't used to that, you're really going to struggle.
I'm glad that you've hit on that, because right now, like, current conditions present such a great opportunity to launch startups. And obviously, from the COVID perspective, people are getting kind of overwhelmed and tired of the corporate world, realizing that as a result of COVID, maybe I want my life to be different, more freedom, flexibility, start my own business. And yet, startup funding has hit an all-time high in Australia and New Zealand, with $10 billion available in funding for 2021. But obviously, if everybody could do it, we would all be entrepreneurs. What does it take to build a startup, from your experience?
Well, I'm so glad you asked that question, Mark, because you might know this, but the theme of the most recent series on my podcast, Nerd to Business, was the mindset of the disruptive entrepreneur. And so that series really did delve into exactly what you just asked. And so, because I've interviewed, you know, sort of 30 plus really top entrepreneurs over the last few years, worth a combined $4 billion plus by market capitalization, I've really developed some pretty good insights into this. So it really comes down to five areas. I can spell them out for you. The first one is resilience. So people have got to be really, really resilient. And that goes to what we just touched on a minute ago with risk and pain. And you know, it's a wild ride in a startup. The second one is creativity. And that, in my view, might just be the most important of all, because ultimately running a business and being in a startup is about solving problems. And that all goes back to creativity. So super important trait. The third trait is confidence, you know, having that self-belief, that, you know, that confidence. The fourth is drive. So that's just that baseload energy, that get up and go in the morning, you know, the ability to sometimes pull 14, 16-hour days. You need the drive. And the fifth one was the leadership, being able to really lead the teams, inspire people, and take people on that journey.
All important traits. What really stands out to me is that the three key ones there for me are resilience, confidence, and drive, which to me are kind of part of the same parcel. And it's easy to start a startup and think that you have the confidence, to think that you have the drive, to think that you have the resilience. With Inspo right now, I'm obviously focused on getting celebrities, influencers, and experts on board, as well as pitching for investment. And you think you're resilient until you get a number of no's or a number of people not responding. And then you start to doubt yourself, and then you start to question what the heck you're doing in the first place. So when it comes to resilience, and we're thinking about starting a business, what does that mean? How do we equate whether we are resilient or not? What are the indicators as to what we would have to go through to make sure that we are resilient to push through and be successful?
Wow, that's a big question. So again, I don't think there's any single right answer to that, but I could maybe share some relevant ideas and insights. I think, to use the cliche, it is sort of a two sides of the coin here. Like, firstly, you've got to be sure of your vision. So the clearer your vision and the more research you've done around the market opportunity, then it's resilience becomes easier. Because if you're absolutely convinced that your vision of how your product or app is going to change the world is right, and you've done the research, right? So you've backed this up with empirical data and, you know, maybe user testing and interviews and all the rest of it, then it's easier to push through those hard days, you know, to break down those barriers, to take the no's, right? But if you haven't done that, if you don't have a really strong vision and you haven't done the research and validated the idea or the model, then those knocks are just a lot harder to take. So I think, yeah, there are two things I'd distill it down to, the clarity and power of the vision and the research in the product idea.
And if we actually correlate that back to those five traits that you mentioned, creativity, a lot of entrepreneurs start an idea or a business because they're creative, right? So they've got this, I've got this great idea. And then they go to their friends and they talk to their friends who absolutely love them and say, yes, your idea is a great idea. Why has never anybody never done this, right? But that validation is something that it's easy to bypass because it's hard work. Because it might be a no, it might be against the passion and creativity and drive that we have towards an idea. So validation, I love that. So if somebody's thinking about leaving the corporate world and starting their own business, there some great advice there. You've got an idea, validate it, go out to your audiences, go out to the market to understand whether this actually is something that people want, need, and are willing to pay for, right?
Yeah, exactly. And look, you've raised the thing about the going to friends. That's actually the classic mistake that people make. you know, I mean, I get it. I mean, I did the same thing too. When, you know, for my first business, I went to all my friends and said, hey, what do you think about this? And of course, they all said, oh, that's a great idea, Darren. Yeah, you'll kill it. They're your friends. They're going to tell you that. It's very few and far between the person or the close friend that will actually say, oh, I don't think that'll work, right? You can't trust that cohort. You have to get independent data. And that means, validating through data, but also going out and talking to potential customers. This is the step that a lot of people unbelievably fail to do, right? You've got to get out of the office, get out of the building, and go and talk to lots of users and really, see their problem, their pain points, watch them struggle with the thing or the problem that you're trying to solve, and take notes. That's one part of it. But another quick tip I can give people for validation is to run really simple Facebook campaigns. So that's where you're putting the problem and the hypothesis of your solution to the market, usually through lead ads or something very simple like that, and you're testing the response rates on that, you know, so you can see the engagement. You know, if you're focusing on a particular user with a particular problem, and then you're pitching them a simple sort of solution to that problem on Facebook, if you're getting really good click-through rates on that ad, getting really good conversion rates through to being a lead or an inquiry, that's a good indicator that you're onto something. Alternatively, if those metrics are really poor, that's an indicator that you may have misjudged the market opportunity.
Some great ideas for validation, and validation would be really key before we launch a business. The startup journey is a crazy, exciting, awesome roller coaster, right? And I want to go back to something that you said early in the introduction, Darren. You mentioned about how you'd worked on your own business and you started it, it failed, and it became something else. There's two things I want to touch on there. Can you give us insight into why it failed? And then secondly, is it often the case that when businesses start out, they might not necessarily end up being the business that you thought it would be to start with? Can you touch on that?
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm happy to share that experience. I mean, the business that failed was a social networking site originally for real estate, and then we pivoted and went into kind of more of a neighbors thing. And look, you know, we did pretty well. We got to 8,000 users pretty quickly and some really good press and all the rest of it. But I would say there were a lot of reasons it didn't work. we subsequently have seen that the model that we tried to take on was actually one of the hardest social networking models to scale because it's made up of lots of micro networks, that is individual neighborhoods. So very few people have done that successfully. So we chose a very hard model. We didn't know enough. We were probably a bit overconfident. And there were just so many beginner's errors made, if I can put it that way. And we made some of the classic mistakes that I'm talking about now. We didn't validate enough. We did get out and we spoke to users and we did all of that. But the other thing that comes into play here is timing. So are you early in the market? You know, are you too early? And I'll give you another quick example. My finance business is in reverse mortgages, and that, as I said, has been going for 16 years. And it's only now, in the last couple of years, that there's a real critical mass of energy in both supply and demand building in that space. So a lot of people that I were in that industry with 15 years ago have long since disappeared. And you can mount a really good argument that, even then I was probably sort of 10, 12 years too early. So these are factors that could go into the mix. Timing is a big one.
And so when you pivoted that business and it became something else, how did you know that that was the right thing to do as opposed to close it down? Were there indications?
Yes. Look, I'm a big believer that you've got to be looking at the data. Like, you know, so you look at the data and see the signs that the data is giving you. You know, these are not random signs from some sort of godlike figure above. I mean, look at the signals you're getting in the market and start, you know, threading that into a narrative. What message is it telling you? And so what happened is that because we'd done this tech startup and because we'd really done an MBA in digital, that's essentially what it gave us. We just went from zero to really quite proficient in digital. burned a lot of cash along the way, I might add. But what happened is that people I knew in my network started approaching me for help with digital marketing and growth through the digital channel. And it was happening on a fairly regular basis, and it was building up in terms of frequency. That's the signal that I mean. So I just went, well, I can keep struggling with this startup that is really, you know, sucking the lifeblood out of us, or I can maybe turn this into something else and see how that goes. And that's what we did. And we turned it into an agency and you know, we were off and running very fast. It wasn't a tech startup. There were some things that we missed about that, but it was a much more stable, solid business in terms of cash flows and so on. So that hopefully gives you some insight. You've got to see the signals, and then you've got to absorb that, take the message, and then pivot or adapt.
To be honest, Darren, I just find that really inspiring, because how many people sit there, whether it's in the pub or at home, and they talk to their friends about how they've got this great idea, but they never do anything about it. And there's something about launching an idea, being bold and confident enough to do it, sharing that with the world and going on that journey, that opens up doors of opportunity that may never have opened if you didn't dare to take that step in the first place. Is that what you found in your entrepreneurial history?
Oh, look, absolutely. You know, you've got to back yourself. You've got to take the risk, take the chance. But you've got to be smart about it. You know, like as I said, you've got to do the research. You've got to validate. The other thing is that you have to be passionate. You have to be, enthusiastic about the opportunity. You know, like you're going to get a lot of knockbacks. It's going to be hard. So your mission has to really, you know, resonate deeply inside you, so that can power you through those tough times. We are rational beings, but we're also extremely emotional. And so the emotional side of running a startup and trying to get a business off the ground is massive.
Obviously, there's a few key areas in a startup that has to be focused on. One is the idea, one is the team, and one is money. When it comes to team, you mentioned earlier those five traits. Let's say you're the entrepreneurial guy. You don't have a marketing mind or a financial mindset. Where's the best place to start to build a team around your work?
You know, there are a lot of networking events that you can go to. So often if you're a founder, you know, going to startup networking events, you can meet other co-founders. So for instance, it's very common, as you might know, Mark, for non-technical founders to find a technical co-founder. So someone who's really great at coding and the tech, but, you know, they're not so great at the business stuff, right? So that's the classic kind of co-founder combination. But when it comes to kind of going beyond that and expanding the team, you know, there are a bunch of ways you can do it, but going through the network, going through your LinkedIn, going through your contacts, having a lot of coffees, having meetings, you know, developing a raging caffeine addiction, but finding common ground with people. And, you know, I'm in talks at the moment with a startup, and their approach is really good. They're building a good team around them, and they're doing it by getting them on board with a bit of equity, you know, just a small equity stakes to get the team in. And then once they get through the first round of sort of major outside funding, well then, you know, that might turn into some sort of, you know, salary and whatever, but the equity remains. So, yeah, I think it's just about identifying the various skills you need, having a good fit, complementary skill set in the team. But the thing that I would put sort of at least equally as important as that is the value system. You need people on the team who share the same values, who share this broadly the same world outlook, and that just makes life a lot easier. But on the flip side, you don't want that groupthink. So you've got to, it's a fine line. You want people that you can be good co-travelers with you, but you do want to be challenged, and you want to some extent what Abraham Lincoln called a team of rivals. So you do want that sort of competitive tension in the team, because that does produce a better overall effect.
The two words that are strongly in my mind as a result of all of our conversation is diligence and research. So diligence and research when it comes to your idea, making sure that you're validating it and really understanding that this is something that the market needs before taking that next level. With the team, again, having the right team of people around you and just being diligent in who you bring on board. There are so many businesses that start because A, they think they've just got a great idea, and then B, a mate jumps in and says, hey, why don't we do this together? And there's been successful businesses as a result of that, but many, many, many failures just because there's no real understanding of the product and having the right team around you. So I think that's one thing that I really want to make clear to listeners. You mentioned funding and obviously money. So I've got an idea. I think I've got a good team around me. How do I turn this into a reality because I can't necessarily self-fund? What are the funding options out there for startups, Darren?
Yeah, well, that's again, a pretty big question, Mark. There's a lot to say on that. Look, firstly, the venture capital and angel capital markets, if I can call them that, are much more developed than they were sort of 8-10 years ago. So that's a real plus. And I'm talking domestically, locally in Australia and New Zealand, right? So often the first place for an entrepreneur who's bootstrapping to get outside money is from an angel round. So that's wealthy individuals who might sort of tip in 50, 100, you know, usually sort of up to sort of 400 or 500K in an initial angel or seed round is that's pretty common, and that's pretty doable. Now, to access those kind of networks, you typically, there are groups you can approach, you can pitch, there are events that you can go to. So all of that stuff is good. But the key thing there is, you've got to be ready. You've got to have your pitch deck. You don't want to go into a meeting like that underdone. And so a little tip that I give that I've used over the years, and I'm happy to share it here, is that whenever I'm doing an important pitch, whether it's for, you know, a partnership or, you know, to break into a new market, get a big client or whatever, you know, it can be used for investors as well, is that if I'm pitching to multiple people, I start my pitch with the person or the business of the lowest value. Because I know that I'm probably going to stuff it up the first time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so if you stuff it up and you know, you burn that meeting, you're not burning the highest value connection. And that's something that I learned the hard way when I was an indie rock musician more than 20 years ago, and I went and toured London, in fact, where you're obviously from the UK originally, and one of my songs was playing on UK radio in London on XFM, and we our very first gig, we had all the four or five top record companies came down and saw us play.
Oh, really?
And
wow.
And the gig was an absolute cluster, bump, bump, bump. And you know, all kinds of things went wrong. It was just a disaster. And, of course, you know, we watched those record company executives scurry off into the London night and never to be seen again. And so that lesson is seared into my brain. I mean, so now, as I said, I never start first gig, first presentation at the most important. I start down here, work my way up. And so by the time I get to the really, really important people, it should be very nicely honed and all the bugs are out of the system.
That's awesome advice and great experience there. So the first presentation, like, imagine that as the practice. And if something comes out of it, awesome. If it doesn't, you're learning. You're learning in a real-world experience. It's very different presenting to your friends or people around you to get practice, but a real-world experience, just practice and learn.
Find the scariest bastard you can in your network. I know it's funny, but I'm actually not joking, right? If startup founders, before they go and pitch, they should find the most hardcore, scariest, intense financial/business person that they can in their network. And that might mean not their immediate first person network, going a bit beyond that, going to their friends and family saying, hey, do you know anyone that's a really hardcore business person, a cynic, a really sharp intellect, someone that's really going to pick the holes out of this? And then take them out for a coffee or a lunch or whatever and pitch them and tell them to be brutal. And that's what you want. You don't want to be mollycoddled here. You know, you if you've got some big gaps in your thinking, you've missed something, some of your financial data's out, you want that exposed before you go into these pitch meetings.
And enjoy the process. I'm going through this process with Inspo, and I sat down this week with a lady called Susan Tonks of Oliver and York PR Company and shared the concept with her. And somebody else's knowledge and wisdom, she saw the holes.
Yeah.
And she suggested a few changes. Last night, I had a conversation with a guy who is a celebrity influencer booker for Save the Children as a charity in London. And again, from his perspective of working with influencers and celebrity, he was able to give insight that my realm of experience just doesn't have. So yeah. Again, I would suggest even before the presentations, just get in front of people, have coffee and drinks with people that can just give solid insight from their experience and perspective before you prepare the presentation, because it will set you on the right path.
Absolutely, yeah.
That's awesome. Lots of wisdom here. So obviously lots of people talk in the startup world about the unicorn, the business that is worth $1 billion. And of course, there's a dream there. There's kind of this aspiration that for startups that maybe one day we could build a business that exits, sells for a lot of money, we make a good chunk of money, and maybe never have to worry about working again. But when it comes to shares, see, this is a big thing that I'm looking at, because you can have 100% of a business that nobody knows about and isn't successful, or a small percent of a business that is very successful. What's your advice on managing the share allocations as you bring investors in, et cetera?
Yeah, you know, I think It's about getting the right mix of people. You know, you don't want to firstly get legal advice. That would be the very first thing I would say. Who's a really famous female founder. I can't remember her name. She's from the States, but she's been quite open about this, and she did not get legal advice. And it was she's paying for it today. Like, she's many hundreds of millions of dollars down from what she could have been, all because the early investors control the term sheet and the legals, and so they retain much more of the equity than they otherwise would have. So get the legal advice, but it really goes down to getting the right investors on board. You know, and sometimes that's a hard decision for founders and entrepreneurs. Like, if you've got someone, if you're really pretty desperate for the capital, and you've got someone offering it to you, but you're not sure about the fit, often the temptation is just to take it. But, that can really blow up in your face later on. So even though the investors are the ones with the money and, everyone needs that capital, you've got to do your due diligence on the investor just as they'll do it on you. And you really do want to try and get that alignment of values and just be clear what the expectations are from the start. Every situation is so different, it's but those principles are pretty solid founding principles across the board.
And that's really solid advice. You know, here in Australia right now, there's lots of pre-seed investment opportunities, maybe around 200,000 for 10 to 15% of the business. And if you're somebody that's starting your business that struggles to self-fund, 200,000 can seem an absolute heck of a lot of money and be easy to just jump on, and suddenly you feel like, wow, we've got some money. But it's almost an illusion, isn't it? Because is it the right team? Is it the right deal? And is it the right kind of opportunity at this time? So it's really important, as you say, to not just be kind of have that kind of carrot dangling in front of you and leap and make the wrong decision. Do your due diligence first.
Do the due diligence, but also be aware of the mindset of the investor. And what I mean by that, and I covered this in a couple of episodes on my podcast, I interviewed a venture capitalist from a very successful fund, and also Rachel Newman from Flying Fox Ventures, and that's an angel investing group. And both of them had different amazing insights. But what came out of that is that, and what the individual entrepreneur needs to understand, is that yes, you're looking at that investor and they're interested in investing in your business, but at the same time, they're looking at 20, 30, 50 others, right? Mm. These investors go through an astonishing number of pitches every day, every week. Like, it's a massive number. So if you've gotten through that and you're on the shortlist and you're seriously talking about coming to terms with investments, that's awesome. But just remember that these groups move through. They place a lot of bets, a lot of small bets usually, on smaller companies, particularly at the angel and the seed level, and they are expecting most of them to fail. They don't know which ones will fail, but they are expecting most of them to fail. So when you get that capital, you've only really got a limited time. You've got a limited time. From that point, the clock is ticking, and you have to get some results. It might not mean revenue, but you need either users or, some metric that demonstrates that, oh, this thing has legs, and then they can go to the next round of funding and increase the asset, the valuation of the business, and then get in more capital to then scale it further. So, yeah, once the clock starts ticking, it's not, people often think, entrepreneurs think, oh, if I just get investment, if I just get some money, well, yes, I mean, that takes you to the next point, but the pressure's on. It's not the panacea. It's not the solution. It's just the start of the journey.
So true. Is there an amount of shares that as a founder ideally you should keep for yourself, or is it just not work like that in terms of all investment kind of, or are they all different in terms of investments?
Yeah, I think it's difficult to answer that question because every case is so different. obviously the famous case is Facebook, you know, with Mark Zuckerberg. And sure, even to this day, he's got a massive amount of the equity. I think he owns 35, still owns 35, 40% of the issued shares. That's unusual, you know, like often founders, you know, by the time you've gone through three or four funding rounds, the founding team, you know, might be down to sort of, you know, 10, 20%. Like, that's not unusual. Yeah. But as to the point you made earlier, 10, 20% of a business that then goes on to become worth a couple of $100 million, you know, that's significant. So I think people have to weigh that up, but there's no right or wrong answer. It really, but I think you can skew the odds more in your favor by choosing the right investor.
Mm. And I'm glad I'm hearing this, because obviously I'm in the startup world, and there's lots of people that talk about when they're starting up, they want to keep as many of as shares as possible, because, you know, there's a big golden exit at the end and they're going to make a lot of money. But as you say, everything is different. Every single situation, every single opportunity is different. And it could be the case that, you know, as you say, you might have 20% of the shares, but you've got an incredible team around you that helps you to scale. So it's also important to not get swayed by what everybody else is doing in the world around you, and to really focus on your business, your opportunities. And as you say, get legal advice, but make sure that you are on your own path and carving your own path in your business. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, just get good advisors and don't do everything yourself. Like, you know, and that means that, you know, sure, if you're bootstrapping stuff, funds are limited or whatever, but you've always got to try and make sure you've got that sort of that pot of cash where you can afford to get some good advice from, you know, an IP lawyer, for instance, or whatever it might be. You know, there's some stuff you can't scrimp on. You just have to pay to get the good advice. A lot of the stuff you can do yourself or learn or get, you know, sort of get for free. But really, you need good advisors, and you must seek to take that outside advice, because, you know, if you're just relying on your own viewpoint, even if you're really smart and you're really driven, that is no replacement for those really good external advisors.
So, Darren, the next question I have for you is, when it comes to building a solid marketing plan, what are the key ingredients that must be in that plan?
Yeah, well, that's another big question, Mark. You know, you can go very deep on that. But I think the key thing is, you've really got to start from a solid foundation of data and research. You know, so you don't want to be just sort of putting your finger in the air and sort of just feeling the breeze, so to speak. You've really got to have it based on some solid data. So that means doing the hard yards. It means maybe reading industry white papers, going to census data, getting as much quantitative data as you can to back up your plan. And also identify opportunities. Often you find when you do that research, it opens the door to marketing ideas. But the other side of that is the qualitative data. So when you're doing any marketing plan, you ideally want to have things like buyer personas, you know. So you want to be thinking about, you know, the types of customers that you're going to target. You want to be looking at their pain points, their motivations, and so on. And a couple of other quick things I can add to the list is that you really want to try and schedule and plan out that first 6 to 12 months. Reality will always differ. You know, like a marketing plan is really just a big set of assumptions. Mm-hmm. And you're going to get a lot of those assumptions wrong. Some of them you'll get right. But the real benefit or additional benefit of a good marketing plan is the fact that it can actually give you comfort. So when you come up against those roadblocks and things, you know, aren't going as well as you would have liked in one or more respects, that going back to the marketing plan or the business plan can, you know, calm you down. You know, if you've done the work before, you know, you can go back to what the plan was, reread it again, look at it with fresh eyes. And so having that sort of sense of roadmap I find that even though it will very often be, you know, different from reality, is that it also provides that level of comfort in what can sometimes be a very challenging period.
That's really helpful. It's so easy, isn't it, just to just focus on the business, whether it's the app or the cafe or the restaurant or whatever it is, and not have that clarity of once this thing is live, how are you going to get users? How are you going to get sales? How are you going to grow? Which obviously marketing is key. So thank you so much for that. Two quick questions. One, what would be your must-read books that you could recommend for any startup or founder?
Yes, okay. Well, I love this question. I'm a big consumer of business and marketing books and startup books. I've read, I wouldn't say all of the major ones, but I've probably read most of them. I've got three for you, pretty clear winners for this particular use case, that is for startup founders. The first one is a pretty famous book called The Art of the Start by Guy Kawasaki. So that is generally regarded as the startup kind of Bible. It's actually not a really long book. It's very easy to read. It's accessible. There's some diagrams and stuff in there as well. But it's one of those books that I just constantly go back to and pick up and flick through for different things, you know, and it's really, really useful for startup founders. The second one that I like for this is Start With Why by Simon Sinek. It's a very famous book, again, and, you know, that's, I do believe that mission and purpose is really important in a business, particularly, you know, when you're starting fresh and you want to bring on people and you want to build a culture and you want to, you know, and affect some sort of change in the world, then getting that why question right is super important. And the third book that I would recommend is a lesser known book, but this book is very highly rated by Silicon Valley insiders, and it's called Competing Against Luck by Hayden Christensen.
Oh, wow.
And this book is really around user it's around product development, some user experience, but it's really about, you know, sort of testing your theory of what people want, what problems they want solved, how they want them solved. And it's a very clarifying book for anyone that's developing a product or an app or you know, particularly sort of a web-based or tech-based product. So, yeah, they're my three recommendations.
That's awesome. Thank you. I'll be heading over to Amazon very shortly. So thank you so much for those recommendations.
No problem. So,
finally, Darren, who should be contacting you? Why should they contact you? And how can people get in touch with you?
Okay. Well, thank you for your very, very generous question. So people can always get me sort of the mothership contact point, I guess, is webbuzz.com.au. So there's a phone number there. They can email on info@webbuzz.com.au. That's a pretty good touch point. Why should they contact me? Well, look, I do a lot of consulting with startups for marketing. If anyone needs a hand with that, I'm obviously available. Increasingly, I'm also working in the course content space. So we're doing a lot of work around developing online courses for people. So there's a very big trend towards people monetizing their expertise and, you know, turning their knowledge into courses, and we're launching a platform and an app for that. So on the Nurture Business site, so that's coming soon. So if people have an interest in that, they can also contact me. But look, I'm always up for a chat. You know, I try to be pretty generous with my time and knowledge. Obviously everyone's got to make a dollar, but I'm usually pretty happy to chat with people and throw around some ideas. So yeah, I would encourage people to get in touch.
Awesome. Well, look, I'm so grateful to you for the Nerds of Business podcast. It's an incredible series. It's really helped me to just really understand not just the process of building a business, but what it takes mentally and resilience and learning from investors. And so thank you so much for what you do. And thank you so much for giving us your time and just sharing with us your insight. You've got so much experience. And I know that so many listeners are going to learn so much from you in the same way that I have in my journey to launch Inspo. So thank you so much. You're amazing.
Well, thanks, Mark. No, thanks for having me on the show, and good luck with Inspo. I think it's a great idea, and Yeah, I'll be watching your journey with interest.
Thank you, buddy. Speak to you soon.
Thanks a lot.